Hello, everyone. Welcome, welcome to the Event Hustler Show. My gosh, it has been several months since we have done an episode, which is crazy. We do our Event Hustler Show every week on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and then, of course, we share that on our podcast. And I had a baby at the end of November. So here we are at the end of February, middle of February, I guess, just now kind of kicking off another episode 46 of the Event Hustler Show. Very excited to be back here with you all and having these conversations with industry greats. And today we get to be here with Carrie Farinak from CNTV. Carrie, it has been a very long time since you and I had the chance to catch up. So thank you for taking some time today.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. And first of all, congratulations. You have the cutest kids in the universe. Like, I see them on Facebook and I just want to like squeeze those baby cheeks. I mean, they're
Thank
just
you.
so cute. So, congratulations.
It's that phase, you know, and then they get older, and then you want everyone else's kids because I know you have your own.
Yes, mine are older, college, high school, and elementary school. So, I'll take that baby stage anytime, but I'm sure my
Yeah.
would trade. So, that's the way it works, right?
Everyone tells me, you know, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. So
Yes,
I'm
yes.
trying, you know, I'm waiting for it.
Yes. It'll be great. It'll be
We're
great.
definitely in the early stage. Well, thank you so much for taking some time. I know you and I met in person many, I mean, at this point, it's been years since we met in person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll admit I'm one of those Facebook stalkers, LinkedIn stalkers. I like to watch all the things that you're working on, but we haven't been able to see each other. So this is kind
Agreed.
of why I created the Event Hustler Show is, first of all, it's one of those things. If it's in your calendar, you're going to make it happen. So it's a
Yep.
good chance for us to catch up. And then so many times I've had conversations with industry pros, and then you're like, man, I wish other people got to hear what she was just talking about.
Yep,
It's so good.
agreed.
So
Totally.
I'm excited to catch up with you. But I like to just kind of kick off the episodes with an intro from you about you. Instead of reading a bio, I think it's way more interesting for people to kind of hear your story. So can you tell us a little bit about you and CNTV?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, I would say it's a little weird to be on this side of the interview, right? Usually I'm
I'm
asking the
sure.
questions instead of answering the questions. But I spent more than a decade as a television journalist, mostly at the NBC affiliate here in Orlando, where I live. And then 15 years ago, which I can't even believe, my business partner, Marcelo Zalesi, and I founded CNTV, which stands for Convention News Television. Interestingly, people thought we were like a trade publication in the industry, but really we create content for our clients. So we work with meeting planners, associations, independent show organizers, and we create content for them. So we've been doing this now. It'll be 15 years in September, which is crazy. And we're sort of entrenched in the exhibitions and events industry. And I'm really excited now that I am chair of the board for International Association of Exhibitions and Events. So IAE chair. So that's my claim to fame at the moment. That we're really excited, and I've become so passionate about the industry that I'm excited to see it coming back a little bit.
It's happening, right?
Yes, it is happening.
God.
And despite what you might hear, I have been at shows. I've seen it with these eyes. It is definitely happening. People are coming back to shows without question.
So tell us more about that. I know you have been on site at shows. What has it been like? What are you seeing?
So, you know what's interesting is the people who are there have this energy about them. There's like this buzz on the show floor. I think everyone is just so excited to come back. I mean, when we were in Philadelphia in December for IAE's Expo Expo, every time you turned around, somebody was hugging you. Oh my gosh, it's been 2 years. You know, there just was this feeling of almost relief and enthusiasm. And I have felt that on some level at multiple shows. I was just at KBIS here in Orlando. We had a big team at American Heart Association in New Orleans. We've been to a lot of larger shows. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, some of the numbers are down, right? People are dealing with lower
Sure.
attendees. But I think those people who are there are really passionate about their vertical. They're passionate about their industry. They're passionate about getting back to face to face. They're passionate about touching, feeling, seeing the products, being able to stock their shelves. And, you know, I can legit say that from being to probably, gosh, more than half a dozen, almost 10 trade shows since probably November, December. That's what we're
Wow.
seeing across the board, which is cool.
Now, I feel like every episode I have to say this, like, oh, I prepare all these questions and then I ask you all these other things I didn't prepare you for. So this is one of those. so I know that, you know, obviously people are very excited to be back in person. And we were just talking before I went live. Like, I cannot wait to be back in person myself, even as a total introvert. But one of the things I've been saying that I think is a trend for the future is that people are going to be really excited to go back and they're going to be doing what you're experiencing. And then they're going to start saying, well, that was great. And it was so great to see people, but there are all these things from the virtual world that I kind of want to go back to, like having to, not having to travel to as many shows and I think not that in-person in any way will disappear, but that's where I think we're going to see the trend towards hybrid is in, you know, 2 to 4 years, really, when people start to say, that was great, but what about all these things? Do you think you'll see that? And will that impact event attendance? Or do you think they're just happy to be back and they're going to be back again and again and again?
You know, that's a fantastic question, actually. I think for me, the piece of virtual that's going to live on and on is the education. So I think if I need to get, let's say, some accreditation, right, or I have to have continuing education of some sort, I think for years and years to come, there's going to be that element of it. Wow, I don't know that I really need to get on an airplane to get that when I can listen virtually, right? And I think that that's going to expand the reach, especially for associations who have to get that content out to their members. So suddenly they could reach an international audience, right? So I do think that virtual component is going to live on. I really believe for the trade show piece, though, I think that people are going to come back face to face. It's just my experience that I just think it's so hard to try and buy new products in almost any industry, specifically if it's actual products as opposed to services, without seeing, feeling, touching, sometimes tasting it, if it happens to be a cooking or the restaurant show or something. I just think that piece of it is going to continue to come back stronger than ever. But I do agree with you. And frankly, even in my own personal life, I've been traveling to these shows, but maybe for a shorter time. Maybe I'm going for 2 days instead of 4 days, right? Maybe I'm not going as often. Maybe we're not taking as big of a team. So I think that's something that we all have to ask a lot of questions about and be ready to evolve, because that might change things. And that's something that might stick around. So I think it's a really, really cool question and something good to think about.
It's interesting, you know, and I agree with the trade shows, for example. You know, you're not going to go buy a new product that you've never seen and touched and felt. And I mean, obviously retail, there is a lot of like online shopping, but when you're placing a humongous order for an entire chain or something, it's very different. But I know you're on the content side, right? And that's one of the things that has been dramatically changed. I mean, even prior to COVID, there was so much content available for free online, but now we're talking about like next level with so many conferences and events being virtual. What are some of the things you're seeing in the content world in terms of kind of bringing all of this together and then being able to kind of put it out? What are brands doing? Where do you see that going in the future?
Great question. I mean, I think two things. One thing, we're seeing this huge demand for live studios. So it was something that CNTV was doing pre-COVID, but if I'm really honest, it was kind of a bonus for folks, right? They might have a studio on site. They might stream it out. They might not. But now so many of the shows that we are working with want that live studio. And I think it's because it can be such a bridge. It can be an attendee experience on site, right? Especially if you have like high top tables and you have chairs and you have speakers and monitors, it can be a destination or attendee activation, but it also gives you content for the virtual platform and for weeks after. Because I really think that just like Kiki saying there, I'm seeing that too, that she wants an easier way to attend for education. I think that's true. And I think these live studios, that's one way that they can deliver information, deliver education without having to have people travel if they aren't comfortable or their budgets have been cut or whatever it looks like. So I think that is what we're seeing, the live studios. And then the other thing that is harder and we have to evolve a little bit is customization, right? So for sponsorships specifically, or what works for exhibitors, I kind of feel like the days of selling a 10 by 10 or a 20 by 20 are sort of gone. We have to be looking more at what are these exhibitors and sponsors really trying to get out of an event and customizing things for them. And I know it's harder. Like it is. It's just harder. And unfortunately for a lot of our clients, they're trying to do this harder work with fewer people. And I feel that, you know, but that's what I think is still going to bring people face to face. And what I think is working when I look out there and see it.
Yeah, I think that's a big conversation in our industry is that, you know, that model that has worked so well for so long has transitioned. And what are you seeing that works? Are you seeing, you know, you're talking about customization, but are there any particular customizations you've seen that have gotten sponsors really excited or that you think would get them very excited?
So, you know, we obviously focus on the video and live streaming content, but in our world, We've done a couple of things differently. So a couple of years ago at the plastics show, for example, Shell had just gotten into the plastics game. And so their goal was to get the Shell logo on anything they could at the plastics show, because that was their goal, to associate with that event, right? So Gardner sold a large sponsorship to Shell for the MPE network. Their logo was on every video. It was on the studio. It was anywhere we could put a logo, right? And then we did a different show more recently where an insurance company really wanted to be positioned as a thought leader in the industry. It wasn't so much the name recognition as their knowledge base, right?
Sure.
Instead, we covered the content that they were producing. We featured, it was FM Global. We featured FM Global's CEO within the video content. And those are two very different styles of sponsorships, but both worked depending on what the sponsor actually was looking for. So again, it's a little bit of customization, or at least being willing to ask those questions instead of just having a menu of things that people can check off.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely key to the future, and the content being a huge key to that, because people really want that tie. Now, you mentioned live studios, and I did make that the title, so I'm sure there are people who are watching live who want to learn more.
We should talk about it at least for a minute, right?
Yeah, I think we should cover that. So you talked a little bit about how people are using live studios at events, and whether that's in person and, of course, virtual. I know you guys use StreamYard and other tools to do things like this. Yep. So what are some of the big trends that you're seeing as it relates to live studios playing a role in events in any format?
So what's interesting is kind of what preaching to the choir for us, we think works, and we think we're seeing more of it now, is actually turning those studios into television programs, right? So we were at NBAA, National Business Aviation Association, in Las Vegas in the fall, and we had a live studio on site. So we had a host interviewing keynote speakers, exhibitors, attendees, and then we also had a roving crew. So that roving crew, we were able to check in with periodically throughout the day, which meant if you were on site, that was a really cool engagement, right? Some of that was broadcast right there. You could watch it on the show floor, kind of exciting. And if you were watching virtually, you got a real flavor for what was happening on site. Maybe not enough that you could miss it in the future, key to the story, but you could get a sense of what are the keynote speakers talking about? What are the big topics? You know, for them, they were talking a lot about DEI and sustainability. So this was a way for them to position that and reach that. So those roving reporters and turning it more into a television program is something that we are seeing. The other thing, we just got back from American Heart Association, and they had a really cool setup. They had a live studio, a roving crew, and incorporated the general session into it. So we might broadcast a speaker, for example, from the general session, and then cut right to the set where somebody was interviewing them for a deeper dive, and back the other way, right? So if you're in the general session, you then can see the studio being broadcast in that space. So I think making use of the studio in multiple ways, frankly, getting more bang for your buck, is really smart and is new, and trying to capture all that content so that we actually have some year-round material. You know, everybody was preaching 365 before COVID. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, we have to really do it now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you feed that beast? I mean, it is quite a beast to feed.
Yeah.
So anytime there's a studio where you're capturing as many as 15, 20 interviews a day, suddenly that's material to feed the beast.
Yeah.
So that's another way we can be successful.
Now, you did talk about TV quality production, and I hear that all the time in the industry, especially now that, you know, okay, we've done the StreamYards and the basic stuff, but now everyone wants something way fancier. If we're going to keep attention, especially to the virtual audience, it's got to be way better technology.
Right.
What are you seeing in terms of the tech that people are using? Is it as fancy as what you're going to get at NBC, or, you know, what do planners need to know? Because I think, you know, for me included, that's daunting. You know, I could deal with like a Yeti mic, have some basic setup with my in person, but
I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think it depends on the audience, right? So years ago, we worked with the National Association of Broadcasters. Okay, if you're NAB, you can't mess around, right? I mean, you've got to have this unbelievable studio that's created. If you're CES, you need this really expensive high-end area. But I think if that's not your audience, it doesn't have to be super complicated. For NBAA, for example, when we were on site in Vegas, we did have a big news desk, right? For example, well, we're going to work with them at their show in Geneva, and that's a huge expense for them. So instead, we're going to use two director chairs and a high top table. I mean, that's one example of a way that it doesn't have to break the bank. And for technology, you know, we use Streamyard like you do. We think that works really well. We use technology called Live View, which is sort of a portable backpack, which allows for crews to be roving and check in live. That is something that television stations use. But much beyond that, you know, I think it's okay to simplify depending on the budget and depending what you're trying to do. So often I think I never want sponsorships to drive content, but I think sponsorships can drive expense. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we had Shell as a sponsor, that's a huge company, for example, right? So NPE built out this huge studio. I mean, it was what they did, right, to match that. But there are other companies or associations or show organizers that might have smaller budgets. You can still deliver the information, even if you don't have NBC level of a set and a studio and all that. It can be done pretty portably. And again, frankly, I think that's on us to customize based on what our clients need, just like they're having to customize for their audience too.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of the mistakes that you're seeing people make either as it comes when it comes to live studios or maybe just in general in terms of content? You know, everyone's trying to create so much content and engage virtual and in-person audiences. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. What are the mistakes you're seeing?
So one of the things I think is what we just talked about, meaning, unfortunately, I think people sometimes will focus on only the technology and not the content. I actually, right before COVID, I had someone call me in a panic and say, we spent $100,000 on this amazing video wall and we're not sure what to put in it. Okay, well, to me, that's like backwards, right? So we need to be thinking about the content first and the point of it. What are we trying to do? What's the main goal?
Yeah.
So I think that's a mistake number one. The other thing, and again, forgive my bias, but I also think that having a professional television talent is really key. Or having someone on a staff that maybe knows the material really well, but has actually been on camera before, because I think that just makes it more engaging. And a professional can bridge all those different transitions. If something goes wrong, they can usually dance, as we call it, and fill the time, right? They can switch if they have to, if a guest doesn't show up. So I think not having a professional talent is also a mistake. But I think the biggest mistakes we see are in what we just talked about, meaning missing opportunities for sponsorships and generating revenue, or missing opportunities for year-round content and building that brand throughout the year. To me, it's not so much mistakes as it is missed opportunities, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. And we are seeing some comments come in from people who are watching live. If you're watching live, feel free to add some comments wherever you're watching or questions for Carrie, and I'll work those in. Kiki's here. Kiki, hello, hello. Hi, Kiki. She says, I think when you have a talented interviewer, like the two of you, and stable technology, you can get away with a relatively low cost solution that works really well. So she's totally agreeing with your professional talent, which I agree completely as well.
Right. Well, and you know, it does depend, right? I mean, if, for example, let's say you're doing a deep dive in education, right? I mean, we work with ASH, the American Society of Hematology. Those are extremely difficult topics, right? We're talking about illnesses and diseases and drugs that maybe someone with a television background might not understand. So then it's important to bring in a professional who can help you do that. ASH helps us tremendously in terms of pronunciations and detailed information like that, because we know it's so important. But if the topic is Global Pet Expo, for example, we work with pets, that talent may not need another expert as well, because the topics are a little bit easier to understand for sort of a larger audience, if you will. So again, I kind of come back to the customization, right?
Yeah.
Where it depends on who's the audience, who are you trying to reach? You can't be really basic to a group of doctors, right? They need the information, and they need it in a very specific way. So I think that's a difference too.
So if you're talking about just kind of I know you've been in the interviewer seat, as you mentioned many times. Yeah. And if you were talking about a hybrid event where you have these two different audiences and there's a lot of talk about getting them to connect. And I know people are starting to think about doing more than just streaming, mm-hmm. more than just putting the camera in the back of the room. Right. What do we do in all those breaks? What do we do? And I think the interviewer or that live professional talent really has to do more than just interview people. There has to be like filler content. And you mentioned this a little bit a few minutes ago. What are some of the things you're seeing that people are doing content-wise to engage people in the virtual audience in between whatever might be happening in the in-person. You've given a few examples, but I know you've done a lot.
Yeah, we call it interstitial content, right? So basically it's that content that while you're grabbing your soda at home or checking on your kids or going to the bathroom, whatever it is you're doing in between that keeps people engaged. I mean, I think the key there again is messaging. So what is the message? I mean, early on, I think a lot of folks were doing things like yoga and music and sort of more creative components. I think there's a place for that for sure, if you know your audience would participate. If not, I think it can be more of an opportunity to actually deliver a message. So for example, promoting other events, maybe. I mean, that's use that opportunity, right? Engage the online audience, have that talent, take questions and banter back and forth specifically to people who are online. Even commercials from exhibitors, you know, we're all used to watching television programs. We know there's commercials. So it can even be a place to run a commercial or what we call an advertorial, which feels more like content, but it is paid content, like pay to play. Yeah. So those are some of the things that we're seeing. And I think, you know, the audience is really smart. They've been Zooming for 2 years now, right? I mean, we have to give people a lot of credit. They know that they're going to be sponsors. They know they're going to be advertisers. So give them a platform for that. Make it compelling, make it interesting, feature them as a thought leader. And I think the online audience will continue to engage. And you've also generated some revenue doing it that way too, which is key.
And going back to your comment earlier about customizing the sponsorships and not just selling the 10 by 10, I think really thinking about, you know, at the end of the day, sponsors want to pay because they want to reach that audience. Why do they want to reach that audience? Because that audience is the kind of audience who buys from them, which means if you think about the other side, those people want to know about these companies. It's not just shoving messages down people's throat that they don't care about. Ideally, at least, these are two parties who like to work with each other and it's just about exposure. But I think there's not enough thought around how do they want to learn about these companies? Do they want to watch commercial after commercial or see the logo in 5,000 places? Or can content play a bigger role in that?
Absolutely.
Where people are learning something and then they're thinking, oh, I want to go check that company.
Yes, and yes, I could not agree more. I think it is all about the content. And specifically, if I'm showing you how my product works, I don't think that feels like irritating commercials and advertising. It's actually, like you said, what the audience is looking for. So to me, that might be an online new product showcase. For example, it might be demonstrations, right? I mean, if I'm looking to buy some new technology, I would love for someone to be able to show me how it works and do a demo. And that's probably better than just a 30-second commercial, for example. So I couldn't agree more. I think there's a huge place for the old term of content marketing, but just with a sort of renewed look because you're live, right, potentially, or it's produced, depending on what you need. But it could be produced and then shared to an audience that's hungry for it. You know, they haven't been to trade shows in 2 years. They haven't been to business events in 2 years, potentially. So show them what's out there. Show them what they're missing. Walk the floor with a live camera. Walk up to people, you know.
This
was pre-COVID with the International Woodworking Fair, but we actually put a GoPro on a woodworker. And so we had our professional camera and host, but then he would literally walk up to the booth with the GoPro so you could see how the products worked, like a personal point of view of an expert. Brilliant idea, right? So the audience wants to see how those things work. So help them do just that.
And
So I think there's a lot of opportunity for that.
I completely agree. I think a lot of times event organizers look at sponsors as, you know, a paycheck, like a certain dollar amount, and not remembering that the reason why that's even money on the table is because the role of an event is to bring the right people together.
Buyers and the sellers.
Yes.
Sometimes we have to go back to basics.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things I am thinking about, so, you know, we do our Tech Talk Global conference every year, and I'm always trying to think about, you know, what should we do differently? And one of the things that we're thinking about is the idea of short form content. And I mean, super short form, like TikTok style, 30 seconds, minute. And so, of course, I can see easily the application for like marketing, right? So we can share tons of content leading up to the event and get people very excited. But I'm actually playing with the idea. This is just out there. I haven't officially committed to it of doing like a TikTok conference, meaning not necessarily on TikTok, but like all the content you get is that length. So there isn't like an hour long session cut to 30 seconds. It's let's get a speaker to give us 5 30-second clips or whatever, and we put it together in a way that people can consume on their own time. They can kind of flip through it, and you learn basically all the big points you learn at a conference sitting there for 8 hours, but in a more engaging way and a lot faster. This is maybe not going to work.
I like it.
But what are you seeing just in terms of short form content and attention spans? And I mean, do people really need 30-second content? Or I mean, obviously for continuing ed, right, we can see people sitting through hour and a half sessions because they have to learn something very deep. But outside of that, what are you seeing in terms of attention
spans? First of all, I like the way you think. It's out of the box. It's the way people are actually, you know, engaging in media outside in their normal lives. We've got to be able to bring that in to the industry, in my opinion. So I love the way you think. Something that comes to mind is VMX. So we started a new CNTV marketing division because we knew that so many people kind of cut their marketing departments and may need to outsource that. So I'm super excited about that. Megan Saad, who used to be with IAPA, is leading that. And our team was just on site at VMX, North American Veterinary Community. And very specifically and very targeted, it was all for Instagram and Instagram stories, which meant nothing was more than 10 to 30 seconds at the longest, right? And so all day long, it was pushing out that very short form content. And part of the goal there was to get drive-in audience, right? Because it was in Orlando. So again, I think it's very, very specific to who's the target audience and what are you trying to achieve? Because in that particular case, it worked like a dream. It was great. Their engagement was through the roof because they had a very targeted audience with a very targeted goal. So, you know, I think it's on the front end, and especially like doing TikTok, obviously trying to reach a younger audience, right? Makes sense. Trying to reach a purely virtual audience makes sense. It's all about what you're trying to achieve and what will work for that. So yeah. I want to see it.
That's what we do at Texi Talk is just try the things. Our tagline is we fail, so you don't have to publicly. We'll try it, and then it might work, it might not work. Joe says, so no speakers from the South, TikTok speed versus Southern growth. That's
right. You do have to be careful about that, right?
People can speak a lot faster than they think they can.
That's true. And you can always listen faster too now. You know
anything? Oh, yeah, just 5X it. There you go.
You just kick it up a notch. You know, it's funny that we actually have a lot of our clients asking us for either the voices, like Voice of God, or the talent to be maybe international. I mean, that's a place in and of itself to show diversity.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So if your audience is from the South, maybe identify with that or bring someone in from the North or whatever it means. But that can actually be a way to bring in a different kind of voice that subtly you realize, oh, this is more diverse. This is a different kind of audience. This is more inclusive, which I think is always a goal too. So
I'm glad people are thinking about that.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So time flies when you're having fun. I know we only have like 2 minutes left, which is insane. Are there any other things that you want to share with people or things that you're excited about that are coming up that you want people to know about, or you're just excited, so you want to talk about things that are coming up?
So, I mean, I'm just excited about the industry getting back on its feet. And so when I made my speech at Expo and talked about my goals as chair for the year, I have a prop, right? So I brought in Ted Lasso, right?
There you go.
For anybody who watches Ted Lasso, I just think that there's this magic in his optimism, because I think what's key is that we can't be optimistic with blinders on, our head in the sand, and think everything's going to be unicorns and rainbows and come back. That's not the case. Let's be realistic. But I think as an industry overall, we can be optimistic that we can figure this out. And that's really what I think IAEE is trying to do. And so when I think of the industry overall, I think that's where we are. This is not going to be easy. It's not going to all go away. We're not suddenly going to have 2019 numbers. Like, we have to be realistic.
Yeah.
But I think if we show up and we're curious and we ask questions, I think we'll get there. And that's sort of where I'm going. That's sort of where I'm going this year with our company, even in my personal world. You know, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
Deciding when you're traveling. But I'm just optimistic that we can figure it out, I guess.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. If there's anything we've seen in the events industry over the past 2 years, it's been the innovation, the willingness to rethink. I mean, you can't say that that's been everyone in the industry, unfortunately, but that's what the thought leaders in our industry are doing, is helping us think about how do we navigate this way forward and what do we do? Right. And I think that's really powerful. I see.
Megan saying thanks for the shout out. Sorry, Megan. You know, I also think, again, invoking Ted Lasso, he talks about being curious, not judgmental. And I think we always assume that that means people. And obviously, I agree with that.
Sure.
But I think it also has to mean ideas, like a TikTok conference. You know, let's not be judgmental about new and different ideas. Let's be curious. Let's ask the questions. Let's try it. Some of them are going to work. Some of them aren't. But I think even with sponsorships and exhibitors, if they know that we are trying to do what's best for them and we're being curious and we're asking questions, that's a success in and of itself. And that will get us to the revenue. So yeah. I really think it's about asking questions and trying to evolve.
Absolutely. And half the time you try something, when it fails, you're still learning from that, why it failed and what could be better next time. And, you know, you have to get your clients to go on the road with you and figure this out and to be able to say, I think, you know, based on research and seeing the culture and seeing society, you know, based on something, right. I think this could work. Let's try it. And, you know, I think, oh, Katrina says one of her fave Ted Lasso lines, don't bring an umbrella to a brainstorm.
I like that one. I have not been quoting that one, but I think start to. That's good.
This is a great way to wrap up today's episode because we've talked about so many different ideas and things that people should be thinking about and new ways to do things. And I really appreciate all the work that you're doing at CNTV and just being out there and trying new things. So thank you so much for taking some time to share with us today. We need like another hour, but
let's do this again soon. Absolutely.
Yes, so absolutely.
Thanks for what you do. I really appreciate that you help spread ideas and get people talking about this stuff. So thank you so much.
Of course. Of course. All right. So we will be back next Wednesday at, it's Tuesday. I changed the times. Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for another episode of the Event Hustler Show. Thank you again, Carrie, for taking some time with us. Thank you for all of you who are watching live, Katrina and Megan and Joe and Kiki and all of you. So thank you so much. And we will see you next time. Until then, hustle hard, everyone.
Thanks.